This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The sun is actually cold.
It's cold and empty, and all is lost.
Greetings from Good Morning Night Vale.
Hey, babes, it's me, Symphony.
It is me, Meg.
Hey, sweeties, it's me, Hal, and this is Good Morning Night Vale, the Criterion edition of Welcome to Night Vale, where three of the actors get together, give you commentary, thoughts, fan theories, and even discuss some of yours. This episode is being recorded in the evening of June 24th, 2020, which was a Wednesday.
Wednesday.
And this episode is Best Of...
And the description is, a look back at some of the best Cecil broadcasts we have never heard before. Let's talk about it, baby.
Can I say, to start this out, that James Urbaniak, who plays Leonard Burton, the host of Night Vale Community Radio before Cecil, is a treasure. He's a dear friend for many years, but is such a good actor that every time I do something with him or listen to him do something, I call it going to acting school because he is so good and so effortless and everything he does is so real and honest that it blows my mind. And he was so good in this episode.
He really, really was. And I feel the same way about James when I see his work. He always makes an interesting choice that I never would have thought to think to do. And it's always perfect. It's like he finds things that I did not know existed or could exist. And he just naturally makes the choice. He has such great instincts for that, which is, you know, something you train to get, but he has incredible instincts for performances. I love getting to watch him do anything. I'm a big fan of his work. He's on TV all the time.
I know,
in so many different productions and some of my favorite shows. And every time I see him, it's always great. I specifically really enjoyed him on Difficult People.
Yes.
Anyone Difficult People fan? Yeah.
He's her boyfriend whatever.
He's the boyfriend and he calls her a different name every time. And it's always funny. My favorite is he calls her Tap Shoe.
It's very cute. He just has such an understated quality to him.
Yeah.
You really touched on it when you're like, it's so real and it's like, but it's effortless. But his, and Meg, you touched on it too, but like the way he speaks, like his pattern, like you could read this in a completely different way. And that's what I really like to look at is like, he chose to have this, the way his natural lilt of his voice goes, just gives you a different way to think about certain things. But it was fun to get to hear Leonard Burton. It's just a different style of radio, right? The radio where it's a little bit more casual and it's like, it sounds like he's going to tell you the top 10, like every time he starts talking. It's like his little segue before that. And I love it.
Yeah. There's something avuncular about him too, that he's like, this is like Night Vale's uncle has come on the air and has been delivering us like our community radio.
Wait, I don't know what
avuncular means. Uncle, like an uncle.
New word.
It's like a comfortable button down sweater. If it was a radio show host. So there is like that too.
I love that.
It's like definitely a radio voice, but it's also a very specific, like a voice that you would have trusted for a very long time to deliver the news. And it's completely different, obviously, than what Cecil's brought to the table, which is another like it's just a nice contrast. And I also props to Cecil for playing his character at different ages and just sort of nailing each one. Again, it's like a real it's great to watch very good actors act or listen to them act, yeah. And that's what you get in this episode. It's a really, really, really strong performing all around.
James does the intro for this episode in the script book, and I'm going to read his first paragraph of his essay at the start of the script book.
Please.
And he says, I recorded my lines for this episode on April 14th, 2015, the 150th anniversary of the assassination of Abraham Lincoln. The episode's themes of mystic chords of memory and Leonard Burton's own demise are purely coincidental. My inspiration for Leonard's broadcast style was Harry Shearer's cadence on his public radio program, Le Show.
Yeah.
The way he pauses and then emphasizes and then pauses again. For all I know, Mr. Shearer modeled his approach, consciously or not, on an old broadcaster, Paul Harvey, who had a similar vocal attack. At any rate, Leonard Burton is part of a broadcast tradition.
Hell yeah.
Yep.
That's like so evocative of exactly what we were just talking about. And I love that. And it's and also how smart to be able to draw upon those references and to be able to like, oh, let me do a little homage to that or that this makes me think of that. Ugh, I just love smart actors. It makes me so happy. And he's a nice person.
Yes.
Like, he's a very nice person.
And that is a very Urbaniac paragraph. Like, oh, I was modeling it after Harry Shearer in the show. And I think he was doing, that's a great radio man. And, all right, I figured I'd do that. And he loves, like, he really is way into the craft of it. And a really, like, some of my favorite conversations with him are about just, like, actors we both like. Or him telling stories about sneaking backstage into theaters in New York City as a kid. Because he was a Jersey kid. He grew up in Jersey and he would sneak.
Right.
He would, like, he and his friend would sneak backstage to try to meet different actors.
I didn't know he was one of mine.
Oh, yeah.
Where in Jersey is he from? Do you know?
Where in Jersey is he from? I will tell you.
He eats the pork roll like every other Jerseyite.
Or does he call it Taylor ham?
Oh, yeah. He might call it Taylor ham. He is from Bayonne.
Oh, Bayonne.
Yeah.
That makes so much sense.
That's right. He's an Obie Award winner, too.
Yeah. For the Will Eno play, he won the Obie, right? For when he was in.
Yes. He won.
It's like a whole monologue he did. Is it Tom Paine based on nothing that he won the Obie for? Let's see if my mind is as good as the internet.
Who's the new Google? Meg is. Yeah, so if anybody ever wants to know anything, just email me.
I think he won it for Tom Paine based on nothing by Will Eno. Let's see if I'm right. Let's go to the...
Yes. For his, he was nominated for a Drama Desk Award for that.
Oh, it was a Drama Desk.
That was his. He was nominated for that, but he won an Obie for Richard Foreman's *The Universe*.
Oh, he was in a Richard Foreman play. Ah, interesting. Mm-hmm. Also makes sense. Also lines up with the Bayonne. Richard Foreman. Are you guys familiar with Richard Foreman's work?
No.
He's a real weirdo. He's a real weirdo. I love Richard Foreman's work. I saw one of his plays a couple of years back, and it's. Bizarre, but great. It's like so strange, but you don't hate it. I don't know how to describe it, but other than that, like there's a lot of really wild stuff that goes on and none of it really makes too much sense, but it's like real interesting to watch and takes your brain places. And yeah.
Can I tell you what took my brain a place? Teenage Cecil in the first little section.
Yes.
He talks about how barren Nightvale is and that people start showing up, including motherfucking Lee Marvin.
Yep.
Which, by the way, thank you everyone for writing us on Twitter about your experience when you learned about Lee Marvin being a real person. Most people, it was today.
Yeah.
They figured
we got a
out.
Number of emails and Patreon messages that they were today years old.
Wow.
That's great.
When they found out that Lee Marvin was indeed a real actor. But yeah, we get some interesting history of Night Vale. And Lee Marvin was there from the jump.
He was who the hell were they broadcasting to? And when they get to like the 20s, he's like, He's like, oh yeah, radio. Who? What were they talking on before?
That's the. I mean, Night Vale is so weird, and also this is a nice picking up of the thread of like Cecil, the Earl Hanlon idea that there is a huge chunk of their life that is missing. But even that doesn't line up with the rest of this because we go from what the 20s,
the burgeoning of Night Vale.
Yeah, we do like the 20s, 30s, 40s.
They come with their sock meat crowns.
Yeah.
And the burgeoning of radio with Marconi.
Yeah. Yes. That the 30s is not until like Cecil passed his early 20s.
Right.
So like that's like New Year's Eve 1934. So I'm like, the timeline is wild. But you know, time is weird. So is a thing that we just accept. But the fact that Cecil was there as a young man, as an intern, when Night Vale was being created.
Yeah.
They came with the soft meat crowns and all this stuff. That's been totally wild. And he's, you can see the resentment also grow towards Leonard throughout his monologues as well. Because he's like, well, I've been an intern for a really long time. And yeah, he has. And he's like, when is he going to basically give it up? And then he ends up being the host, but it's forever. It seems like.
It's the Santa Claus.
With Tim Allen?
That's right, with Tim Allen.
It's the Dread Pirate Roberts.
He's the Dread Pirate Roberts. Yes. There you go.
Yes.
Even better.
I was like, wait, you have to kill. He killed Santa Claus. That was not just an accident.
I want to throw out a mind cannon, by the way. He did murder Santa Claus. Please. Let me just say that.
Mind cannon.
I would agree with you.
Mind cannon.
Which is that the key to time being a square instead of a flat circle or whatever is Lee Marvin, who is eternally, who's always turning 30. So if he turned 30, like he will never turn 31 and he will never regress. He will never go past 30, but he will also never be younger than 29. And the idea that that is somehow the key to all these temporal disturbances or the length to which people can, maybe they're all a bunch of Highlanders. Maybe they're a bunch of immortals like in Highlander where they chop each other's heads off with swords.
He does say, the early 20s Cecil does say, so a happy big 3-0 to immortals. Well, he says immortal screen legend, but he emphasizes immortal a little bit.
Yeah.
During that. And then he goes on to say, celebrating a special day by opening his seventh eye and incinerating onlookers by the Wailing Hundreds with his holy light. So Lee Marvin is like a double D's.
There's definitely something very special about the power that Lee Marvin has.
Yeah.
This episode is so bananas, you guys.
It is.
Yeah.
I think it's great. I really enjoyed listening to it when I went back and heard it today. Same. And I was really impressed by the sound design work. I was really impressed by the acting. Cecil does a really good job playing young and playing mid, like just kind of aging himself through the years of that. I thought that the writing was incredible. I thought that the slices that they chose to use to progress the story, like, were just really, really interesting and really eerie. And there's so much that, like, we're getting a ton of new information and it's all scary and weird, but it's just presented in such a way where, like, it does the Night Vale thing where it keeps that even keel, even though we're getting such weird things that are happening and such non-normal things that are happening. And time and space is completely bending. We've had time and space bend in this show before and otherworldliness bend in the show before, but this is like an episode that is entirely about that, entirely about playing with our perceptions of what, where, and how Night Vale is. Like it just plays entirely into that. Like Cecil is not a person like we're people because he's been around forever.
Right.
And Night Vale is not a town like we know towns, you know? And this is like kind of putting the flag in the ground on that.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Because
there's been so much before that indicates that, but this is like so much. Time doesn't work the same way. Space doesn't work the same way. Life doesn't work the same way, and we don't know how it works. And those rules keep changing.
Oh Yeah, and it could go that way at any moment. Can we talk about the Nulogorsk thing?
In 1983?
That is wild. Well, first of all, it's like two different, and it kind of creates like two different timelines almost, where in one, like, it's the end times, right? And poor old woman Josie doesn't get to be old woman and all that stuff. And then they skip to the one where it goes on like normal, like everything's fine. And it's freaky. I love it.
Yeah. Well, it's also interesting because Leonard and Cecil, their lives are not operating in the same way that Josie's is, because Josie seems to have like a normal timeline where she's born as a child and then gets older the way that humans get older. And eventually, spoilers, she dies. But they're all like, that's like over the course of 90 years, as opposed to Cecil, who was hanging out with Marconi and and settling there when, you know, Night Vale was settled.
Yeah.
He was reporting when they were settling, which is just like, well, intern reporting. So then it also says something about like Leonard Burton, because also he's existing in this space now. But then we get to the tape where Cecil's basically eulogizing him.
Yeah.
In an ad, kind of. With Shasta, right?
Reporting on his gruesome death. That was brought to you by Shasta. Yeah.
Okay. I used to make, just a little aside, I used to make this joke as a young actor that when something annoying was happening, I was like, I'm going to my trailer. Someone bring me a Shasta. I never had a trailer, nor would someone ever bring me a Shasta. I just made the joke as if I were going to storm off. But those who know me know I would never, I'm a consummate professional. I would never storm off. Have you? I've never actually had a Shasta. Have you?
It's not very good.
Oh, really? Is it only one flavor or what?
It is only one flavor.
It's orange, right?
I remember it have... No, actually, they have more than one flavor. They do. I remember it being like, like a brand of sodas. Like there's, you could have like a lime Shasta. I might be making that up. The funny thing is that one of my friends growing up, her mom always had Shasta in the house, and her mom was from Bayonne.
I don't think so. We also, by the way, to jump back in, this idea of like anytime we go to recorded history, recorded audio, that it's clearly from a different time. It's something that nobody remembers happening, or that is like is some kind of gateway. Either things that are recorded are gateways to something else, or these tapes that show up. It's either the recording itself or just the tapes have showed up from another dimension, either the active recording or whatever it is. So this idea that he's recording in our reality, I guess, from a reality where Cecil has been alive forever. Like maybe this Cecil that we know has not lived forever. And isn't Lee Marvin is dead in – or no, he's still alive in –
No, he's alive.
– in other Night Vale episodes.
He turns 31, though.
That's right. So there you go. So there's something to – there's some sort of time loop that all these recordings belong to in an alternate history.
Yeah, well, you know, and – but maybe there's multiple things happen. Maybe there's multiple timelines and, like, realities of Night Vale, a multiverse, if you will, and where – sometimes these people die or whatever. It's like, but are we getting the same one every time? Maybe not necessarily. And yeah, maybe these tapes. Because there were those other tapes that Cecil had, right?
Cassette, yeah.
Yeah, cassette. That was also start, and Cecil didn't remember having these. But we don't know, Leonard Burton has these, but like, this makes my brain hurt.
Right? That's kind of the point, is that it's like, they've created a fictional universe. So in a fictional universe, you can do whatever you want. And so they're doing that. They're not abiding by any rules. There's no rules about how any of this is supposed to work. And that's kind of the game of it, is that they keep moving the goalpost about how this works.
Right.
And that's kind of the fun of it for me. The fun of it is to be like, okay, they're doing this, but does this line up with this? Nope. Okay. It doesn't matter. Like,
right.
it's just, this is the world that they built. And in the world that they built, there's endless possibilities for how things can work.
Yeah.
And that's a blast. And this, I really love this episode. I think that Cecil and James have a really nice rapport between the two of them. Yeah. I think that, like, it really feels like the casting just seems perfect. I know that, that Joseph and Jeffrey wrote Leonard for James, but it feels like if you were to make this, this is how you'd make it, right? It just seems like the
logical. Yeah.
And they did. And that's how, yeah, I feel everything kind of feels so right. There's like a really nice click to it, which is interesting for this show because it's providing us so much new and weird that it's like, well, this is how it always was. And it feels that way. Like it feels.
You feel instantly comforted, like, and a familiarity almost with James, even though we haven't heard him before.
No, this is the first. Right? This is his first, yeah.
This is the first time, but like instantly, and I maybe it's just because I know him of in a way, like I've met him a few times, but like, I don't know. I think it's just his voice is like instantly trusted, trustworthy. We had heard of Leonard Burton before, like Cecil had referenced in, you know, those things.
Yeah.
But you instantly were like, ah, yes. Tell me more. I'm not worried or thinking about trying to figure out why this is happening. But yeah, this whole episode is fun. It's written very well. It's totally wild, and it's a mind fudge. Mind fudge, mind cannon.
Mind fudge. There's fudge in my mind cannon.
The section where they're talking about Leonard's demise is so graphic without being graphic. Like they just, they give you all the pieces, but don't show you how they fit together.
Ugh. I wrote on the side of my book, yikes.
Yeah.
Cause it was like, ugh, especially with the fingernails. I'm like, ugh, that is such a visceral feeling for me. And because I've watched so many horror movies, anytime that happens, like, and you know what happens, it always like snaps back. Oh, God.
Brush yourself out.
Woo! That feeling. Yeah. It's just like, oh, it makes me itch all over.
Sorry.
Like, no, it's okay. It's the same thing when I see like bones, like bones coming out of your a finger that like breaks or something, or like skin is split open. I have that same like sort of like empathetic, visceral feeling, and it tingles through my body. That, and it's just like, ugh.
Boop.
It's one of the ways we're all human. That's one of the like. Empathy.
That's how we know.
Those of us, not everyone has empathy, right? Sociopaths don't. But for those of us who do have it, it's that human connection where you see someone else is hurt and you can feel it yourself. Like, and so specifically too, like this bending back of a fingernail. I've never had my fingernail snapped completely backwards, but seeing that or hearing about that, I can feel it causes me an uncomfortable feeling, not pain. Like I can't like, not like can't feel it, but I have that essence of uncomfort.
Yeah.
The same thing with comfort too. Like we have that too. Like you see something really adorable or really warm, or you can feel it. You like get that feeling of warmth.
Like when you see a sweet puppy on the TV or something, or far away, you're like, I know what that would feel like under my thingies.
Nice. Look at dogs.
I want happy thoughts, not snapping back of fingers.
No. But yeah, but I think that style is interesting. We don't know what happened to Leonard, but we know that it was bad.
Yes. And bits and chunks and whatnot. And it was.
And then he comes back and is like, oh.
Is he a ghost? Or do you think he's real?
He's seeing things from a different perspective than Cecil saw it that day. So we don't know which way he's looking at it. But those two things are starting to come together for him. And it's upsetting.
Yeah.
I mean, how would you feel, right? Like,
well, when you find out that you've died in a horrible way?
Yeah, like, oh, I'm dead. I don't know what to, like, that feeling that he uses, like, I just feel like, is that the lie or is this the lie?
Well, because you're like, well, I am present. I feel like I'm here. I'm talking. I'm doing all these things. But that this has happened? Question mark. did it happen? And like, what's to prove what's real, right?
That's the fun of the game, right? Is that we just keep changing all of the rules and sliding things around, and there's no specific rhyme or reason, but there are ripples.
Ooh, that gave me chills. Yes, I love it. Like good chills.
When you create a big fictional world, you know, just go, there's no wrong answer. Which is, I think, a lot of the things that have inspires us to listen to the show, because there's so much left to our imagination. And it's kind of why this our podcast exists, is to discuss it and to discuss what we think happened and listen to fans and hear what they think happened. And it creates conversation.
I like a splitting universe sort of thought. So that's where I'm going with it.
Yeah, I do too. I like the idea of all these different like braided timelines.
Yeah. But it's interesting that we have a recording of it from like, did it come through like a wormhole, or like, did it just like exit? Like how did those things stay recorded? Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
if something in the timeline changed or like whatever, you know, but that's fascinating. But this maybe also the same thing, like when stuff like goes through the dog park,
yeah,
comes back through the dog park, you know, all that stuff gets shot in from other places, you know, you could just open a door and stuff is crazy. So I think that that's probably how.
I think you also have to think about where Cecil right now, you know, so we're told that Cecil's on vacation and we are laboring under the impression that he has gone to visit Carlos in the desert otherworld. Right. So what happens when Cecil leaves Night Vale? Does that cause some sort of shift? You know, does it cause Leonard to reemerge, to come back from the grave? Because someone who knows what to do has to be behind that microphone. So, how does that relationship work? Does Cecil's physical presence in Night Vale change the rules of Night Vale? Does there always need to be a cursed radio host, you know?
I'm shook.
Damn. Also, Cecil was an intern for so long. Why can't he keep any interns alive?
Well, maybe he's the one who's killing them, because Cecil was an intern, and then he, after Leonard died, he became the guy. So if
he doesn't want them to take over for him,
he knows what happens.
He knows what happens. If the intern were to live, eventually they would take his place.
Boy, does that color every single time he's eulogized an intern.
Anyway. This episode's great. It's one of my faves.
We are going to think about that shiz.
Yeah, really.
But up next, we hear from fans and friends of the podcast about their theories, comments, and questions. But first, a conversation about this episode's weather, which is When Can I Say That I Love You by Kyle Fleming.
When can I say I love you, Meg?
I think when you feel it, you know?
I love you.
I love you.
I love both of you.
I love you too, Hal.
Oh my God, I love you, Hal. We did it. We said it right now at 8 p.m. on June 24th.
It's a Wednesday.
Yes, yeah, it's a Wednesday.
I have two feelings. Ready? One, it made me sad, and it was like about like loving someone and like, when is the right time? Like, is it ever the right time to say that to them? But I think I think you need to tell someone you love them. I think you need to tell people you love them, period. Because nothing's ever promised to us. Time isn't promised to us. Love isn't promised to you. But all you can do is know that you told them before anything else. That's why I tell people I love them all the time.
And you got to show as well as tell. Because when you say that you love a symphony, I know that because you also show.
That's true.
Yes. It's in my love languages.
It is. You do. Love is a really great word. It's a really great feeling. But love is an action, my friends. You have to.
You're right.
Yeah. It's important to tell people, because people should know out loud that they're loved, but they also should feel loved.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this is a lovely little song. It felt like very... So it's like this little acoustic folk. It's sometimes nice to just get something that, like, the Kyle Fleming is not like some big acoustic folk star. He's a guy with a guitar. I believe he was a submission to this show, and he's one of yours, Symphony. He's from Illinois. He's not from Chicago. He's from Champaign-Urbana.
That's where my brother went to college.
You're Illinoisans? Illinoisans?
Illinoisans.
Illinoisans.
Oh, as a person from Illinois?
Yeah.
Yeah, an Illinoisan.
Illinoisan.
Yeah, Illinois.
Anyway, he's one of yours. He's a music therapist, and he's a singer-songwriter, folk acoustic musician based in Champaign, Urbana.
Neat.
And when I was looking into him, his last tweet was from a couple months ago, and he's like, I'm done with tweeting for the summer. See you in the fall. I thought that was really nice.
Oh, that is nice.
He just takes the summers off from tweeting. So I don't know why.
That's it could adorable.
Be maybe he goes somewhere where there isn't the internet, and I hope that's a beautiful place. I would all love to go there, but I don't know. Or maybe he just does it for his mental health, or what, or for some other reason. But
right,
he was like, "Later, Twitter. I'll see you in the fall."
That's great. Sometimes you do need to take breaks, though.
Yeah,
I wish. I have a bad addiction to the apps on my phone, and I wish I wasn't.
You know, my phone is attached to me at most times. I'm a social media person. I'm from the internet, as they say. But I don't find it to be, there are depressing things on there, but I try to, in all of my respects, send light out and love out into the world. So if I can do that through a silly quip or a delightful picture and or video, or a handstand picture, like whatever you need, you know what I mean? Maybe it's just me and some grass. I don't know. It made me happy. Hopefully it makes you happy.
Yeah.
Give your girl a like, you know, a follow.
Toss a like, toss a follow.
It takes a second to click. That's all. It's a double tap. That's all it takes. It's not that you're not asking for too much.
I don't think so. It's not too much. To show some kindness to a person that's shown you kindness.
That's right.
Well, I like this song. And you know what? I'm saying I love you to you out there in the world. You know what else I love? A piping hot chock full of cheese and some other toppings. Today, I think I could go for some sausage.
Sure.
Some Italian sausage.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Some green pepper, black olive.
Mm. Yeah,
get wacky with it. You know what I mean?
That sounds delicious.
I know.
I don't like olives, but I'm happy for you.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay.
I'll get, you know what? I'll get a plain one for me. I'll get my own plain calzone.
Just cheese?
Yeah, and I'll eat it and not care at all.
No.
I'll devour a whole.
Will you dip it in sauce?
I will dip it in sauce. And my voice will get really high when I tell you that. I will dip it in sauce. I'll put it in a whole vat.
I'll alternate a marinara and, but if there's marinara, there should be marinara inside, right?
I don't know. No,
you think
I don't
you have a stromboli.
So.
And I always think of stromboli too.
Oh, there's no marinara in a stromboli.
Yeah, isn't that the one that's just a pizza folded in half?
No, that's.
Wait a minute. Hold on.
Stromboli is like meat and cheese, but it's like flatter. And it's like somehow, like it's the cheese is
oh,
not
that's right.
shredded. It's
yeah.
like sliced cheese. And it's like a pepperoni. It's not like a pepperoni roll, which I know is a different thing.
But calzone has the sauce. Yeah, the calzone's just calzones, the pizza folded in half.
No, I don't think calzones always have a sauce inside of them. The calzones have like ricotta and like shredded mozzarella and a meat or not.
Gabagool?
And a veg. You could put a gabagool in it. I don't think you should, though. I feel like gabagool's better.
You don't want
You don't want your gabagool hot.
No.
I like gabagool cold.
Yeah.
But yeah, you can put gabagool in it. It's fine. But I feel like the sauce is always something you dip in. I feel like there's not sauce in the calzone. It's just
okay.
Like the cheese is what makes it different.
There can be, but there isn't.
I've mainly had calzones with a marinara sauce inside. But yeah, it's basically just like a pizza inside. And I like it because it's hot and it's good. And I just like squish the stuff up to the top and then and then I bite a little bit because it's too hot, because the cheese is too hot and it's just going to burn my mouth. And then I take a little bit of ranch because I'm from the Midwest. So take some ranch, maybe pour a little bit on there, get a full bite, go back again, squish it up, squish it up, squish it up. Sauce.
Yeah.
You know?
That's right. Because stromboli, you cut in like slices But the calzone, I looked it up online at a bunch of these different sites are saying, calzones are basically pizzas that are folded in half. which the more food blogs I see saying it, the more I'm convinced that you're right, Meg. And they are 100% like, oh, you know, you take a pizza and you fold it in half. You just take it and you fold it. And then you got a calzone. You got a fanzone calzone.
And that's where we're at right now. Fanzone calzone.
Stay right there. Good Morning Night Vale will return after a brief break.
First off, we have Blue. Blue writes, hey, I just want to start off by saying that I really enjoy listening to Good Morning Night Vale and welcome to Night Vale. You are all so funny and incredible voice actors. I didn't just insert that line. They actually wrote that, and it's so sweet. So thanks, Blue. To Symphony especially. Oh, that's me. Your performances as Tamika Flynn are always really good and very similar to how I imagined her voice. Well, thanks. I'm glad I match up. Something I was wondering, how far ahead do you record? I've been seeing recordings going up that were recorded before quarantine, and it made me wonder how many episodes you have done already. Also, how long does it usually take you to make an episode? Here's to hoping you don't record far enough ahead to have episode 67, best of, recorded, though, because I have some thoughts. You were right on time. I think the recording we were hearing was from another reality. Hey, same.
Hey.
Because Leonard Burton is alive, and spoiler for later on, we find out that he got hit by a car and died in the universe that Night Vale takes place in. However, I do think Cecil is as old as this episode shows, because Earl keeps on trying to talk to Cecil about it. I think that's really interesting, because this episode, as well as Cassette, are before that arc happens. And whether it was on purpose or not, it's really neat that there's possible foreshadowing like that. Of course, Leonard could always just be a ghost or something related. I know you've already done Memories of Europe, but I think that what's going on there is that Cecil accidentally ends up in another reality that's just as weird as Night Vale, and all those places are actual countries there. And that's what happens to intern Kareem, too. Later on, he went to go to the wrong reality when he tried to go home. Again, I really enjoy listening to your podcast. Thanks for making it. Blue Shore. Wow, cool name. Well, Blue, you're my person, Blue. I agree probably like 99% of this. We talked about this during this episode. Yes, alternate reality stuff. But yes, I do think Cecil is just like that old and all of those things. And yeah, I think maybe that is what happens to intern Kareem as well. Thank you for writing in. You're a babe, Blue.
Yeah, Blue. We've decided going forward that we are going to give you the date and time we recorded the episode before we record the episode from now on. So Blue, you'll have the answer. You know, when we recorded this, we said so at the top of the episode. So usually we record, it depends on our touring schedule. Back when we had a touring schedule, so we would always, Symphony and I really don't like to record on the road. So we would try to get our episodes done before, if I knew I was going to be away. So it really does depend. Right now we record two episodes in a night. So we record like a month's worth of podcast in one night. It takes us, right now we're an hour or 2 hours and 11 minutes into our recording session, because we like to chat at the top just to check in.
Yeah.
And we also like to take a little break in the middle. But yeah, so.
And talk about food off mic.
We talk about food off mic. Usually there was a couple of weeks back, last recording session, after we were done recording, Symphony and I coached Hal through him using his Instant Pot for the first time over the Zoom. Yeah. So, you know, we sometimes just hang out.
Listen, when we're done recording this, I'm going to tell you what I'm about to make in the Instant Pot, because I got the air fryer lit. I've been going crazy with it since both of your guidance. You know this, but the listeners don't know.
In the span of 5 weeks, Hal has become the master of the Instant Pot.
Well, and then I followed suit and got the air fryer top, the air fryer lid as well. And I'm going to the store tomorrow and I'm going to break into doing the dehydrating part.
Yeah.
So keep you updated on that business.
Moving on. Andrew writes to us. He says, "Hello, Meg, Symphony, and Hal. I've been greatly enjoying Good Morning Night Vale and eagerly await each new episode. Thank you so much for your time and energy that goes into making them. And of course, to anyone and everyone else who is involved in the creation and running of it. I had never gotten very far into Welcome to Night Vale. Something just always seemed to come up that took me out of it for long enough that I lost my place and couldn't quite find it again. And listening from the beginning to the 100-plus episodes was always a bit daunting. With your work spurring me on, I find my love of Welcome rekindled, and I am now braving the unknown waters ahead of what you have released of Good Morning instead of simply pairing episodes together. So thank you again." Oh, you're doing it. You're out there without us. Wow. In episode 67, we get a lot of implied and some lightly described gore about the death of former host Leonard. And I wonder, what do you think happened to him, or at least that version of him? I am inclined to theorize this is some form of ritualized government-sanctioned punishment, possibly directly linked to the role of the radio host. And within this theory, I would suggest that Cecil may be walking himself along a similar dangerous road of beginning to question too much too publicly, as seen with his dog park-related outbursts in the previous episode. Yours in wonder and questioning, Andrew. So, yeah, well, thank you so much for listening. And you're bravely out there listening to episodes that we haven't talked about yet. So keep doing the work. We enjoy it. Hello to the future. What do I think happened to Leonard? I don't want to picture it. What I want to picture about what happened to Leonard is something that fits into that description, but it is somehow not that. So it's this really gory description, but actually what's being described is like, the fingernails are just like his fingernails are being painted, and the snapping is just like people snapping in appreciation for him. And like I want the other side of that coin to be just like really lovely things that are happening to Leonard, because we get such an affinity for him in this episode that I don't want something horrible to happen. So in my mind canon for this moment in time, let's go with really lovely things happen to him.
That's a lot nicer than mine.
I was imagining that station management eats him.
I was thinking he got hit by a car, but the car fell out of the sky and fell on top of him rather than hitting him one move forward. Just randomly, not attached to anything. Just a car fell from the sky and he got smushed. Like the little foot at the beginning of Monty Python's Flying Circus that goes...
Yeah.
Okay. Thomas writes, "Dear Symphony, Meg, and Hal. Hello, I'm Thomas from Indianapolis. I love your show and wanted to share my thoughts on / memories of a few upcoming episodes. Sorry if you've already recorded your coverage of some of them. I don't remember what prompted it, but after Deft Bowman aired, I did some research. I found out about the real-world NATO nuclear preparedness exercise called Able Archer 83, 1983 being the year it was carried out. Supposedly, some in the Soviet Union believed it was actually a cover-up for a first strike against them, and set up their own nuclear weapons, bringing the world to the brink of nuclear war before the exercise ended and tensions ebbed. Since Nulgorsk never moved past 1983, as apparently described by the genderless spokesbeing, and Simone Rigaudot insists the world ended in 1983, I think it's a solid assumption that this is when Night Vale diverged from the timeline of the normal world, with much of its history before that becoming retroactively weird. This is strongly supported by what we learn, spoiler alert, in episode 67, Best Of, and much later in episode 109, A Story About Huntakar. Thanks for your awesome show, Thomas from Indianapolis." The retro part is new to me, that it like retro becomes weird. I think that more supports maybe two divergent timelines joining together, that there are intersection points, and that maybe that was an intersection point. And maybe they go, you know, intersection point doesn't have to be a single second. They could join together for a little while and then diverge again and then join together and then diverge again. This idea that it has to be like there's this one moment in time where everything crossed and that is the only moment I think could happen. why not? Why couldn't the theory also be that these two timelines run at least parallel or share experiences, and then based on what happened earlier in that timeline, a new inciting incident causes the timelines to diverge again? Why not?
Why not?
Anything's possible.
Anything is possible if you believe it in your heart. Well, I want to thank all of you for listening. That does it for episode 67. The next one is episode 68, Faceless Old Women. Is it woman? No, it is women.
Faceless Old Women.
That's right. If you're not yet a Patreon on our Patreon and you have the ability to do so, you can go to patreon.com/goodmorningnightvale and find all sorts of fun goodies there. Until next time, good morning, Night Vale. Good morning. It's June 24th.
Good Morning, Night Vale is a Night Vale Presents production. It is hosted by Symphony Sanders, Hal Lublin, and Meg Bashwinner. It is edited by Grant Stewart and mixed by Vincent Cascione. It is produced by Meg Bashwinner. Theme music by Disparition. Special thanks to our fans who submitted their thoughts this week. Leave us a voicemail at 929-277-2050 or email us at info@goodmorningnightvale.com to share your theories and ask questions or to tell us how hot it is, because we don't know. This show is powered by our patrons, like Abigail, Carla Tawal, LaShonda Hill, Larry Williams, and Jennifer Coons. If you are interested in supporting the show in exchange for lots of fun, exclusive, hyper-cool kid content like Patreon-only live streams, check us out at patreon.com/goodmorningnightvale. For more info on this show, go to goodmorningnightvale.com and follow us on Facebook and on Twitter at Night Vale Chat. Special thanks to Joella Knapp, Jeffrey Craner, and Joseph Fink. Today's adverb is up. I used to sit in traffic on Houston Street in New York City on my way into work every Friday night, and I'd get stuck at this one spot at Lafayette and Houston, and there's this huge Calvin Klein billboard there, and I would be glowered down upon by this billboard, which would feature images of white, thin, cis people. And I would try not to look up, because if I looked up, I would see unblemished white skin stretched over ribs and hip bones. And if I looked up, my eyes would have to absorb the fact that this is what we celebrate. This is what we hold above. This is what beauty is. This is what I am not. Last month, the beautiful Jari Jones, a fat black trans woman, was on that same billboard. And even though I am miles away, I felt like I could finally look up.
Hey, y'all, it's Jeffrey Craner. So I do another fiction podcast called Within the Wires, which are stories told through the guise of found audio. Each season is a separate tale. You want a prison escape told through relaxation tapes? That's season one. Want a love story that unfurls through voice messages only? Season five. How about the revelations of an unexplained death told through a series of museum audio guides? Season two. There are seven seasons of Within the Wires for you to binge right now, each only 10 episodes long. So go get Within the Wires wherever you get your podcasts.